Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I want to start with a throwback to last week and a look forward to next week via something I said last week. I don't think we adequately celebrated the death of Sinwar. Yahya Sinwar, who was vaporized by a tank shell or an artillery shell from the Israeli Defense Forces. The IDF posted a meme showing Sinwar seated in an armchair at the height of his powers. And right next to that was the picture of him in his final moments in an armchair, not looking so good. And then he was vaporized. Turns out one of the four bodyguards found dead alongside Yahya Sinwar was an employee of the United Nations, a teacher employed by the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. That's the UN outfit that Israel expelled and took all their office space a couple weeks ago. And everyone was outraged that Israel would do that against kind-hearted relief workers from the United Nations. Yeah. Okay, so that was something that we missed last week. I think I missed that. A look forward to, is it next week or is it the week after? Anyway, it might be the week after. But a look forward to something that I said last week. Last week I mentioned and asked everyone to ponder the idea that the alleged right-wing Fox News gave Dominion Voting Systems almost $1 billion. And I said, just consider that that might be used to threaten and sue people as when they steal the current election like they did the last one. Well, from the Gateway Pundit, Dominion Voting Systems issued a warning last week to all the alleged conservatives. They posted up on X. Here's what Dominion Voting Systems said. Quote, Dominion is closely monitoring claims and strongly encourages use of verified, credible sources of information regarding Dominion Voting Systems. We remain fully prepared to defend our company against lies and those who spread them. So that's like a mafia boss basically sticking a gun under your chin and telling you to do right. Just pay to do right. Pay attention. Do what I say. The company turned off comments on their post. The website that was linked in the post is a Dominion website, and it insists that it is a U.S. company headquartered in Colorado with, quote, no ownership ties to George Soros, foreign leaders, including no financial ties to the Chinese government or U.S. political leaders, unquote. Now, why would you put that in your company's statement that we're not owned by George Soros or the Chinese or anyone in politics? It's because you're owned by all of the above. In fact, it might be Dominion Voting Systems, whoever's behind that operation, who actually is running the White House and perhaps the greater part of Western civilization at this point. That's right. We're not owned by any. Who are you going to believe? Dominion Voting Systems or your own lying eyes? You better believe Dominion Voting Systems or we'll sue you. The Dominion link up on X also provided links to fact checks from mainstream media websites affirming that it has never been responsible for election-related crimes or voter fraud. Here's what it says, quote, thousands of audits and recounts since 2020 have confirmed the accuracy and integrity of election results and verified the reliability of Dominion's certified voting systems. Unquote. Did we mention they were certified and have been audited thousands of times since those guys in Atlanta put up the poster board over the windows? It's been audited thousands of times. We had nothing to do with any of that. If there was any of that going on, it was the election workers who claimed the pipe was leaking and pasted up the poster board and covered everything. Yeah, it wasn't us at Dominion. I should probably not mention Dominion again because the algorithms will come. Dominion will file suit against me, and they've got $1 billion worth of lawyers to come at you. Yes, Dominion's link, or I'm sorry, link, I meant post. They posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, quote, Dominion is taking action to set the record straight and defend our company, our customers, and our democracy. Whose democracy? Well, Dominion says it's our democracy. And I don't work for Dominion. Do you? So who's our? I think that means Dominion. It's our democracy. You people shut up. Okay. Let's see. By the way, this was the first time Dominion Voting Systems has posted on the former Twitter platform since Elon Musk took it over. They haven't posted at all. Not once. Until they just posted a thinly veiled mafiosa-style threat against everyone. And reminded us at the end that it's their democracy. Okay, so there. If you were nervous about the election, now you know why. And there were more stories. I don't have time to do them all, of course. Can't do every story. But there were more stories permeating the mainstream media websites and the conservative aggregators, preparing everyone for at least to not expect election results on election night. Probably not until Friday, Saturday. Probably Saturday. Can we all agree on Saturday, maybe, if everything goes according to plan? So everyone's being prepared for that. And both sides have hired thousands of lawyers. Or they haven't hired them yet. They've just gotten them all worked up and ready. And when lawyers smell a payday, just Katie bar the door. Anyway, it should be interesting. I'm going to hold my fire on the pro-life industry and Charlie Kirk and the rest. Because isn't there one more weekend before the election? There is. So I'm going to hold my fire on all these people and give them an opportunity to apologize. All of the pro-family industry hacks and the pro-life industry hacks, these are people who make money pretending to support godly principles, but they do it in an ungodly way for their own belly, and they've been putting the guilt trip on those of us who simply can't vote. So a vote for the president, just in case you're not aware, is a vote for the person who will publish what's right and wrong and administer justice upon your neighbors. That's what it is. You're voting for who will administer justice over your neighbors. And so it's not just a data point in a zero-sum game where the most important thing is the election. That's not really what your vote is. Your vote is you deciding who's going to rule over your neighbors. And God said to love your neighbor as yourself. And so when you vote who's going to rule over your neighbors, that has more to do with you and God than it does with whoever wins the election. And so those of us who hold to a biblical standard, we can't vote for a vulgar child-killing proud citizen of Sodom from New York City or the empty skirt vacuous quota hire. We can't vote for either of those. Well, there's only two choices in the election. All right, I'm going to hold my fire on the rest of that. Because it's quite possible that Charlie Kirk and everyone else who claims to be either religious or conservative or libertarian or whatever, guilt tripping the Christians. Because they say there's 80 million of us who aren't going to vote. I hope that's true. If there's 80 million Christians who can't tolerate voting for either of the two leading candidates, that means there's some hope for America. That means there's some hope for America, which would go against every other signal that we get on a daily basis everywhere, like this one coming out of Los Angeles. Now, normally, you would not expect to look for Los Angeles for any signs that there's hope for America. And you would be correct, especially this past week, where the district attorney up there, Gascon, who is employed by owned by George Soros, unlike Dominion Voting Systems, who they don't even never even heard of George Soros. Gascon, I can't remember his first name. Anyway, Gascon heard of George Soros whenever Soros bankrolled his campaign for district attorney up there in Los Angeles. And now Gascon, the district attorney, seems hell-bent on releasing the Menendez brothers before the election. Just to put it right in your face, who's running things? That's right. I've got the story here from the New York Post. L.A. District Attorney Gascon has revealed that he is approving the consideration of a resentencing of the Menendez brothers. Right? And here's the thing. If the judge agrees to the district attorney's recommendations, since the boys were convicted under the age of 26, according to a new law that was recently passed by the communist maniac, a criminal gang running California, called the California Youthful Offender Law. Yeah, right. Because of that law, the Menendez brothers would be released immediately. Like at the end of the hearing, they would be let out of jail. Now, District Attorney Gascon wants to make clear, he says, quote, "There is no excuse for murder. And I will never imply that what we're doing here is to excuse their behavior." What? So, okay, well, you don't have to imply that. Mr. Gascon, we're inferring that based on the fact that you're trying to get two murderers out of jail. Now, he says that they were abused. And if anyone, many people in the audience may not have even been alive or paying attention when the Menendez brothers shot and killed their parents 30 years ago. And then after the fact, after lying about a number of things, and being shown to be liars and murderers, they started to claim, oh, that their father was molesting them. And nobody believed it then, and they were convicted. Although I think they did get a bunch of people to believe it for a little while. And one of their attorneys fell in love with them, might have married one of them. I can't remember. It's a disgusting, vulgar, vile, awful, horrible story that you would have just thought you wouldn't hear about until one of these guys died in prison. Because they got life in prison. Gascon says he doesn't want to imply that what he's doing is trying to excuse their behavior. He says if you do get abused, like what the Menendez boys said was happening to them, if that happens to you, says Gascon, the right path is to call the police and seek help. Okay, well, we can't call your office, obviously, for crying out loud. But anyway, and then he says, however, of course, right? Sometimes abused people can get desperate and ultimately murder their abuser out of desperation.
So that's acceptable.
So that's not that we're excusing that, but sometimes it happens is what he's pointing out. So that you might ponder and consider that might be an excuse is why he said that. And if a judge agrees, they'll get sprung. And they, I don't know, they'll finally get to marry their lawyer, and maybe one of them will marry Rosie O'Donnell, and no one will be able, no one will be there to stand up for the honor of the Menendez father. And it's despicable, disgusting, and it's one of the reasons Charlie Gascon is going straight to hell. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. It's not Charlie Gascon, it's George. But I was thinking of Charlie Manson. Came to mind. George Soros Gascon. George Gascon. Yeah, he has heard of George Soros. All right. So if the Menendez brothers are sprung before the election, I'm just going to take that as a bad sign. And I'm not a superstitious guy, but I would take it as a bad sign no matter what. But it would be a bad sign for it. In fact, let's go now and check in with Viktor Orban over in Hungary. So I've been saying for the better part of 4 years that the government's been seized by a criminally insane sex cult. And that for the previous 230 years or so, we were just fortunate not to be ruled by a criminally insane sex cult, because that's typically who rules the world. If you go back through history, it's not that uncommon a situation. And so America is simply falling into the norm. What's the word that the liberals hate? Exceptional. Yeah, we had been exceptional, but we're about to not be so anymore. We haven't been for at least the past 4 years. Maybe actually since about 2008, when the first naked communist was installed in a fake, phony, stolen election. So it'll all come out on Judgment Day. And when we're able to see what actually happened, it could be that we're going to find out that the elections have been stolen since, I don't know, somewhere around 1960-ish. Anyway, but let's go to Hungary, where Viktor Orban accuses the Polish government of being an installed proxy of the European Union. Orban says that the European Union basically blackmailed Poland, got rid of their somewhat conservative, at least he wasn't for rampant sexual immorality and open borders, the previous prime minister and government there in Poland. But the EU got rid of him and installed their man, who is, let's see, who's their man now? Tusk. Orban says now they're after him. The EU is going to try to take out Viktor Orban and replace him with an EU lackey. Yeah. He has openly stated that what he sees as EU blackmail is going on. He says there's not enough money in the world to force us to accept mass migration and to put our hands in the children of faggots and queers and creeps. He didn't say faggots. He said LGBTQ activists, because he's a diplomat. He's somewhat diplomatic. Faggots, perverts, child molesters, queers, deviants, freaks, and weirdos. He says there's not enough money in the world. There was enough, apparently, to buy off the Polish people. Anyway, so he says Hungary is in Brussels' sights. They're going to push Orban to the side through a fake rigged election. Get some Dominion machines installed in there. And they're going to install an EU-friendly elite, which would mean a big pile of perverts. Orban suggested that he was on a radio interview. He said Poland's government and their prime minister were installed by the EU as part of a plot to remove the country's previous right-wing populist leadership. He then went on to attack EU Commissioner President. No, how do we say that? EU Commissioner President Ursula von der Leyen. which sounds like a made-up name, like of a James Bond. She would be the female villain, Ursula von der Leyen. And it sounds like just so made up. It's like Yahya Sinwar. Really? Come on. Let's see. So Orban says he doesn't like her at all. And he says the leader of the European People's Party, Manfred Weber, isn't very impressive either. Calls them a couple of punks. Says they're seeking to replace his government as they did in Poland in 2023. And he ain't scared. He says, bring it on, Ursula von der Leyen and the European People's Party, Manfred Mann Weber, whatever that is. It's probably not even a real person. It's an AI-generated talking head. And so anyway, they're going to go up against Orban. And I think it's next year. Is it next year? They have an elections next year. 2026, sorry. 2 years from now. Tusk, the new prime minister in Poland, has quickly aligned with many of the EU policies that the previous government resisted, especially with the homos and the faggots and the queers. But he has not opened his borders sufficiently. For whatever reason, probably because, hey, in Poland they remember, you know, a border's actually pretty important. Okay, so we'll keep our eye on Viktor Orban, who, well, if you're looking, you know, you look at Los Angeles, you got Gascon, and that's pretty depressing. So you look over at Orban, and at least the guy's willing to stand up and say, look, we're not letting you sodomize the children, that's all. I mean, it's something. It's a pretty low bar, but it's about all we got left in the secular world anymore. Speaking of all that, and the criminally insane sex cult that conquered America, we have a story from the dailyfetched.com. I'm not sure what that is. So, but it links to a story over at Red Voice Media, who I have no idea who that is. So this may be all completely made up. This is from the death penalty file. A whistleblower over at the General Services Administration. Oh, that's right. I did look at the undercover video. So a whistleblower at the General Services Administration. What is that? The General Services Administration is the executive branch office that spends money. They award contract. The General Services Administration administers like the defense budget. They actually write the check to buy the artillery shells. Anyway, there's a lot of money going in and out of there. A lot. A whistleblower says that the GSA, the General Services Administration, issued a $347 million contract to a company to transport unaccompanied minors across the United States. The whistleblower, GSA specialist Clarissa Rippey, revealed the contract after raising concerns about how the children are being treated during their transportation. She revealed this to James O'Keefe and O'Keefe Media Group. All right, so hey, he's been exposing MSNBC as liberals, and then he exposed Facebook as being left-wing, and we're all thinking, Jimmy, what's happening, man? You're off your game. Well, now, he may have exposed a government contract to kidnap children, which I know that's a nutty conspiracy thing to think that our government would contract with private industry to kidnap and smuggle children around the country for untoward purposes, immoral purposes. So color me tinfoil hat. I believe it's not only possible, I think it's highly likely that the criminally insane sex cult that sees the government is trafficking and kidnap children. I think that's completely plausible. And I think this James O'Keefe and the Clarissa Rippey, I tend to believe it. They would have to, someone needs to, I doubt anyone will be arrested for this. And so no one will have to prove anything. By the way, whatever happens to these people that Jimmy O'Keefe exposes, do any of them ever go to jail? Do any of them ever have to resign or get fired? Is it possible that Jimmy O'Keefe exposing them and everyone going, oh, that's awful. Is that enough? It's not enough. It's not enough. If the government is kidnapping and trafficking and kidnapped children, somebody needs to be arrested the day after this happens. The day after the video comes out, doors need to be kicked in. Files and phones and computers need to be seized. But that just, I don't know, that doesn't seem to happen anymore. Maybe it'll happen in this case. Who kicks in doors at the General Services Administration? Well, that would be the FBI. Yeah, but they're, that's problematic. Maybe it's Homeland Security. Oh, wait a second. Homeland Security? What happens when the kidnappers are the police? That becomes problematic. Then you just got Jimmy O'Keefe and everybody going, that's awful, that's terrible, and then nothing. And then the machine just continues to churn. And anyway, this Clarissa Rippey, the whistleblower, disturbed about a contract, a multi-million-dollar contract to transport unaccompanied children. Now, we know, by the way, that the administration calls all kinds of illegal aliens unaccompanied minors because so you just don't know what's going on and who's telling the truth and who's kidnapping who and who's importing terrorists and calling them unaccompanied children. And so it's about time some doors get kicked in or something really bad is going to happen. You know, either one of the terrorists that they called an unaccompanied minor. You know, they had 12 terrorists. They all had turbans. And they all had the sword of Allah strapped to their thigh. But they were called unaccompanied minors and put on a bus. And sent to Illinois. So either they're going to strike. Or the machine that's kidnapping and hurting children. That's going to bring down the wrath of Almighty God upon the whole country. So one of the two things is going to happen if doors don't start getting kicked in and heads don't start rolling over this disturbing criminal activity. Yeah. That's right. The country's been taken over by a criminal gang, governing officials, and so-called NGOs, charities. They should all be having their doors kicked in, and they should be put on trial. And the reason this came from the death penalty file is because if what's going on is what it sounds like is going on, if they're convicted, these people should be put to death for what they're doing. Alejandro Mayorkas should go on trial for his life, along with probably thousands of other people who are participating in this. All the way from the NGO over at Human Rights Watch, all the way to the White House, for crying out loud. View, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. Hey, Jimmy, what was that? That's right, O'Keefe Media Group. No, that's not enough just for everyone to be shocked about it. No, I'm sorry. All right, now from there, just in case you haven't noticed, and I almost missed this story, which is illustrative of how the theatrics of the Democratic election have been pumped up to where they can suck so much air out of the room that something as monumental as the collapse of Cuba's government could happen and almost nobody notices. Cuba's government is on the brink of total collapse. Why? Because the electricity went out about a week ago and they cannot turn it back on. Not only can they not turn the electricity back on, they're not going to be able to anytime soon. And things are going to spiral into a catastrophic situation here over the next week or so. So here, as today, as America stands on the precipice of going all in with the communists and installing a communist dictatorship in a skirt, the Cuban government could collapse before our eyes, before Election Day. There could be a massive boat migration. People literally fleeing for their lives. Because without electricity in Cuba, it's hot and the food rots and you can't eat. And pretty soon, people start dying. And the crisis is acute. The crisis began on October 17th. What's today? That's 10 days. The electricity went out on the 18th. And they haven't had electricity in vast parts of the island and Havana for over a week now. That's right. The main power station collapsed and crashed, and that crashed all the other big power generating stations in the system. And one of the workers from the power plant who's worked there for his whole life, he said this thing was a piece of junk when they built it 60 years ago. It's been a piece of junk ever since, and there's no way to fix it now. It was running on rubber bands and duct tape for 30 years, and it all fell apart. And so now that the electrical grid has collapsed, the water system is collapsing. For most of its existence, according to, I believe this is from the Wall Street Journal or the Times, I forget, but it's one of the big papers. There's a website. Well, anyway, let me finish the story. For most of its existence, Cuba's government has relied on the largesse of allies, mostly Russia, you remember back, and then lately Venezuela. But now that Russia and Venezuela have their own problems, nobody's there to prop up the fake communist Cuban government, which is a criminal gang that took over the island under the guise of a liberation civil war. You remember? And then, that's right. Castro hid the fact that he was a communist until the end after he had killed all of his opposition and convinced everyone he was going to liberate the country, and then he came out as a communist. And it turns out he was just a petty gang. Him and his buddies, him and his brother and their buddies just wanted to bust the place out for as much money and cigars as they could get. And they've been doing it for since 1958? Anyway, it's been a long time. Cuba's prime minister, who's just a puppet, he's the guy the gang puts out there to make statements as if they're governing. He says that now the private sector will have to emerge and pay more for power. While the government, he says, the government of Cuba is going to look toward renewables to secure their future energy needs. Okay, well, your future energy needs are like the day after tomorrow when people start dying in the streets. So I doubt you're going to be able to put in windmills and solar panels for the day after tomorrow. Anyway, it's not a good look. It's not a good look for the ruling cult who've propped up Cuba for 60 years, many of whom are in the criminally insane gang ruling in Washington, D.C. Many of the people who've propped up Cuba for the last 60 years are running the White House right now. They're running the State Department. A lot of them are in the Defense Department. They run the Department of Energy. They've had the Department of Education since Nixon created it. The communists, the international communist conspiracy to take over the world, to steal everything and make everyone a slave. It's not a good look for them here on the eve of the installation of Madam Vacuous. So, anyway, time and chance happen to all men. And it could be that such a massive and undeniable proof of the stupidity and insanity of the communist maniacs trying to steal the election, it's possible that something this monumental could sidetrack or at least postpone the inevitable communist conquest of America for yet another few years and give everyone a little breathing room so that we can stockpile beans and bullets and bandages for whatever they got coming. And so I encourage you all to remember that this life is very short and eternity lasts forever. And the election, nobody's going to remember that 5,000 years from now. Nobody's going to remember that 50 years from now, especially if America's gone. And so concern yourself with eternity more than the next election. And concern yourself with hearing what Jesus Christ said that he did for you and deciding whether or not you can trust him with the destiny and the fate of your eternal soul. That's what I encourage you to do in the face of. And then the beans, the bullets, and the bandages, those might come in handy in the short term. So I'm not saying don't have any of those. I have a few of those on hand, but not that many. Probably not enough. Should definitely need more bullets. We probably have enough food to last. All right, now let's go to reason number 1,243. Together, keep your children out of the government schools. The librarian may start transitioning right in front of them. Yeah. That's right. In Illinois, parents are finally fed up. About 100 parents have pulled their kids out of a government school because the librarian literally started wearing women's clothing. Just walked in with women's clothing one day. And went from one day, he went from being Mr. Sabovic to wanting to be called Ms. Sabovic. Ms., meaning he's available, I guess. What is that? He's not calling himself Mrs., which is, that's kind of disturbing. I just noticed that. All right. So all the kids are like, Mom, Dad, Mr. Sabovic is now Ms. Sabovic. And since a fourth grade, he's a fourth grade teacher. And now, just in case you thought the school was being irresponsible in allowing Mr. Sabovic to become Ms. Sabovic, the school did send a notice to the parents that this was about to happen. Parents were alerted in a letter that Owen Elementary School sent 2 days before the switcheroo into the skirt there by the librarian. So they gave the parents 48 hours heads up. Hey, the librarian's about to flip out in front of your kids. He's going to go through a deranged mental transition. He's going to start wearing a skirt. Now, I don't know how many kids are in this school. I should have looked that up. But about 100 of them have been pulled out. That's one good side effect of the librarian flipping out in front of the whole world is that 100 kids are liberated from the government schools. But the sad thing is the eternal destiny of Steve Sabovic, the teacher who's going through this unfortunate mental derangement. It's sad for him. And then it's sad for the other hundreds and hundreds of students whose parents are, who knows? I mean, what does it take? I mean, a librarian literally started wearing a skirt and putting on lipstick. Right. And by the end of the school day, he's got like a 5 o'clock shadow going with the lipstick and the skirt. And still, the vast majority of the parents continue to send their kids to the school. We have one dad spoke to the Federalist, where I downloaded the story. And that dad said, parents are unhappy that the school gave us such short notice about exposing our children to inappropriate sexual information. Yeah, I think that I think that qualifies. The librarian starts putting on a dress. That's inappropriate sexual information that kids should not be exposed to. And you couldn't give me enough notice on that one. I'm sorry. The dad asked for anonymity, allegedly to protect his child, but probably because he's embarrassed about the fact that he's so incompetent that he sent in his kid to a school where the librarian started dressing like a woman right in front of him. And dad is so effeminate and emasculized that he doesn't even know what to do about it. Because he's got a car payment and there's Monday Night Football. Or I don't know what's going through this guy's head. Oh, and by the way, this is an odd way to report this. The dad said, parents are unhappy the school gave them such short notice about exposing their children to inappropriate sexual information. A dad told the Federalist. Now, that's, none of that's in quotes here in the story. And it's highly unlikely that anyone used the term inappropriate sexual information. Nobody uses that term. That would never come out of a human being's mouth. My child was exposed to inappropriate sexual information. Be like, what? Are you a robot? Nobody said that. Anyway, I don't know what's, you just never know what to believe. Why wouldn't you put that in quotes if you're quoting the dad? Maybe the Federalists had to make up the fact that a dad would even say anything because none of them did. I don't know. By the way, the school also sent a talking points memo to parents suggesting how parents should respond to the librarian and a fourth grade teacher switching from pants to a skirt. Switching from aftershave to lipstick and from Mr. to Ms. The school had suggestions on how parents should respond. Yes, the school sent talking points to mom and dad saying, mom and dad, if your student has questions or statements in answer to any questions, the school's response officially is the following, quote, our LMC director is amazing and continues to do great work here. Let's support her, unquote. And so the parent reads this and they're like, what's an LMC director? You know, bureaucrats like to do that. They like to use jargon to throw you off. They want to make you feel stupid because you don't know what an LMC director is. So you're not even halfway through the sentence and you don't even know what they're talking about. And they say, oh, you don't know what an LMC director is? Aren't you part of the group? Oh, you're from outside. You're an outsider. You don't know what an LMC is. Well, let me tell you, it's a library media center. That's right. And Ms. Sabovic is the director. That's right. So the parent now has been let in on, oh, an LMC director is a library media center director. Gee, I didn't know what that was. And now I'm not sure I know what a boy or a girl is. I'll just go along with this. It's an insidious, I know, who's stupid enough to fall for that? Well, most people, I think. The talking points suggest, as a response to parents' questions or statements, quote, teachers are to respond if parents ask, quote, I fully support the work that they continue to do in the LMC here at Owen. They? That's the preferred pronoun of Ms. Sabovic. She's the one with the tan skirt over there. And the 5 o'clock shadow and the lipstick. We call her Ms. Sabovic. And we're proud. She does great work. Okay. And so that's reason number 1,243 to get or keep your children out of the government schools because of all that. It's the Weekly Worldview. I am. That's right. That's right. If Ms. Sabovic repents and gets back into his head, so the Lord will be there for him. So even a transitioning deranged lunatic is salvageable by the grace of God. We're thankful for that. And we don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings, but you should be fleeing for your lives out of the government schools. And we try to make it as shocking and disturbing as possible because of how shocking and disturbing it is. And if you're not shocked and disturbed by that, you need to get off the drugs. You have to be drugged to not be freaked out by the librarian. Okay. All right. Now let's get to some more normal news. People dying. Yes. And I was going to say I want to start with the good news. I guess there's never any good news. I mean, the fact that someone who played for the Grateful Dead will never play again, that's good news. I wish it didn't involve his death. The bassist for the Grateful Dead, Phil Lesh, died on last Friday.
I thought they were all dead.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know any of them were even alive. So, well, I was just talking about the grace and the mercy of God. Talk about merciful. 84 years God gave Phil Lesh to repent of being one of the primary destroyers of Christian civilization. And as far as we know, Phil did not repent. He did his last show on July 21st, and he was playing Grateful Dead music as if it wasn't shameful. Which at some point he could have grown up and realized that that was really bad. Phil Lesh, living proof that anyone can be called a musician if people are wasted enough. If the audience is drugged to a certain degree, anyone can be recognized as a musician. That's Phil Lesh, 84 years old. They say he died peacefully, surrounded by his family and full of love. And Phil brought immense joy to everyone. I just want to raise my hand and say I never liked any of his work. No joy. He didn't bring any joy to me. So to say he brought joy to everyone would be an overstatement. It's dishonest. I just never took that much drugs that I appreciated Phil Lesh's bass. Or anyone else in the Grateful Dead. So I remember from the first time when I was exposed to the Grateful Dead, because I had heard of them, but I never listened because they were like a C-level nobody, right? Nobody would listen to that garbage. But I got in with some companions when I was going to be a rock star or whatever, and one of the kids was into the Grateful Dead. He started playing it for me, and I was like, there's not enough drugs on the planet. How can you listen to this? So Phil Lesh, 84 years God gave him. And so there's that. And then now this really got me. And I did not expect this. But this story hit me pretty hard. Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher Fernando Valenzuela died at just 63 years old. He died last week of an unspecified health problem, which that seems to be going around. That unspecified health problem. I remember Fernando Mania. Does anyone else remember? You have to be pretty old because it was 1981. Here's this 20-year-old kid comes out of Mexico, doesn't speak a word of English, and wins his first, I forget how many games, like five or eight in a row. I can't remember exactly. And like shutout after shutout after nobody could hit this guy. It was amazing to watch. And this is back when I loved baseball. And if you don't remember 1981, Fernando Mania takes over the whole country for a little while, and then there was the baseball strike. And that 1981 was the summer without baseball. It was a heartbreaker. There was no baseball from June until August in 1981 because a bunch of rich guys were arguing about the money. I remember sitting and we were like, don't these guys make like $100,000 a year? No, they make like $200,000 a year. We couldn't even conceive of how much money that was. The kids, us kids watching, the poor kids. And they were all arguing about money and they stopped playing baseball. And it was just really Fernando Mania was over. If they broke it right in the middle. Anyway, Fernando Valenzuela and the Dodgers went on to win the World Series that year. Although it was marred, the whole World Series was like everyone was like yuck, yuck. It was so sad. anyway, that was back when I cared about sports. Summer without baseball. When I used to care about sports when I was a child. But this was one of the things that made me jaded. You want to know why I'm so jaded? Is because of 1981. That was one of the, that was one of the beginning things right there. So anyway, Fernando Valenzuela, I tried to look up anything about him and his faith and was he a Christian. He never really said anything publicly about Jesus Christ, so he was a Catholic according to his family, and he was married to the same girl for 40 years. So Fernando Valenzuela gets spotted by a scout down in Mexico, right? And he's in this dirt poor town, and he's a dirt poor kid, and he's got a dirt poor girlfriend. He's 20 years old, and maybe he's 19, right, when the scouts first see him. And so he signs a deal with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he's going to go to America, and he's going to be a millionaire, and he's going to be the biggest, most famous baseball player in the world. And before he leaves the dirty little village in Mexico, the poor little Mexican kid marries his poor little girlfriend. And they stayed married the whole time. Anyway. That's just... you know, it's really just normal. That's... Anyway, Fernando Valenzuela does not seem to have been seduced by Los Angeles and all of that. He took his girlfriend from the dirt town back home and brought her to Los Angeles and lived a relatively normal life, had some kids, got some grandkids, and died too young. All right. So we're... probably should have closed with that story because now I'm emotionally drained. So maybe I'll try to do something less poignant and difficult. There's a dairy in London called Neil's Yard Dairy, and a con man posing as a wholesale distributor for a major French retailer conned them out of 22 metric tons of cheddar cheese. About 50,000 pounds of cheddar cheese was swindled by this fast-talking alleged wholesale distributor who turned out to be a con man. And he stole 50,000 pounds of cheese. That's right. Nearly 1,000 wheels of cloth-wrapped cheese, including... Oh, I want to let everyone know. Neil's Yard Dairy has asked international cheesemongers to be on the lookout for the stolen cheese. And so since we appreciate cheese here at the McBurney compound, we are going to keep our eyes open. And Neil's Yard wants you to know they want you to be specifically on the lookout for Hafford Welsh Organic Cheddar, Westcombe Cheddar, and Pitchfork Cheddar. Specifically the 22 and 52 pound blocks. If you come across any of those at the farmer's market, you might be looking at stolen cheese. And you should, well, if you're in Los Angeles, we don't know what you should do. Because you call George Gascon, I'm not sure what you should do. In fact, most of this cheese probably make its way to Los Angeles. Seeing as it's a lawless hellscape where you can trade stolen cheddar for fentanyl and get out of jail the next morning if you have any difficulties in the evening. It's very sad. And then two stories. So since we're on the eve of the election and I'm getting emails from allegedly conservative Christians who supposedly are godly people with a relationship with the creator of the universe, and they're telling me that this is the most important event of my lifetime, is the upcoming choice between a vulgar celebrity and a vacuous empty skirt to sit atop the criminal enterprise that the American government has degenerated into. And I beg to differ. I don't think it's the most important event. So in the state of Washington last week, a teenage boy, 15-year-old, was arrested for murdering his two parents and three of his siblings and trying to kill a fourth sibling, but she survived by playing dead and running to the neighbor's house. So this kid murders his 15-year-old, murders his whole family, sets up the scene to make it look like his 13-year-old brother committed suicide and killed everyone except him. And then he calls 911 and tells the police, my 13-year-old brother just killed my whole family and then shot himself. But what the 15-year-old didn't know was that the 11-year-old sister survived and ran to the neighbor's house. So when the cops got there, they already knew what had happened because the girl was alive. Just shocking and unbelievable. A story that should shake the foundations of every home and family in America and shock, terror, and sadness through the hearts of everyone. And almost nobody can notice because nobody notices anymore. This 15-year-old kid, no prior criminal history, no problems with the police. Nobody can even comprehend how or why this could have happened. The children who lived at the home, according to neighbors, were homeschooled. Described the kids as the sweetest children. Police had never responded to the house for any significant incidents before. So there's like out of the blue. A 15-year-old slaughters everyone in the house, his mom and dad. And I just, this is a far more significant event in American history than whoever wins this election that's coming up. And for those of you who consider yourself to be godly Christians, your response to this event is far more important than your response to the ballot that's sitting on your counter. Although neither is unimportant, there are more important things than who wins a popularity contest to be placed atop a pile of criminals. From the End of the World file, one of five teenage girls who was charged with beating a 64-year-old man to death. So just reading that. Five teenage girls charged, well, they don't say it that way. They so charged in the beating death of a 64-year-old man. Not charged with beating a man to death. They're charged in the beating death of. They just happened to be walking by when a beating death occurred, and they've been charged in it. What does that even mean? Well, what happened is five teenage girls beat a 64-year-old homeless guy to death in Washington, D.C. When asked why she did it, the 15-year-old said, we did it because we were bored. She said, we were actually out looking for someone to beat up because we were bored. And she said, we beat on this guy until we realized something was wrong because he wasn't yelling or responding anymore. And that's because they had beat him to death. 15-year-old girls. Prosecutors in the court case played video of the beating that one of the girls recorded on her cell phone. So they're not charged in the beating death of anyone. They beat this guy to death and videoed it on their phone. This is a far more important event in the history of America and the determining the future of the country than whatever happens on November 5th. This needs to be addressed. And as far as I can tell, no one vying for governmental office at this point is qualified to address any of this. And that really is a sad state of affairs. And so I want to close with, I mean, I don't know if to call this good news, but so a recent study says that infant mortality in America has, there's been a significantly higher number of infants have died than died before the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. And states passed various abortion restrictions that a clinical study indicates that more mothers are carrying what they call congenital anomalies to term. So more babies who are sick are being carried to term because states have restricted how you can kill them for that. Or at that, it's too late to kill them legally. And so that's led to an increase in infant mortality. And the story that's reported by CNN reports that babies with birth defects may only survive a few months, and now more of them are being carried to term. And they report that as if it's bad news. But what they don't point out is that no one is suffering the guilt of having killed them. Which is actually good news, because fewer people are murdering their sick child. Anyway, I don't know. Has anyone tried to determine how many of these fatal anomalies that women are told about turn out to not be fatal? Maybe there's no way to know. I have a feeling that a lot of babies have been murdered by telling mom, oh, your baby's going to die, and then they kill the baby, but they don't actually know the baby's going to die. And so I would guess that a lot of them have lived. And so, but CNN doesn't make note of that. And we don't need a study to know that carrying a physically disabled child to term is better than killing the child. That's better. Even if it makes you sad, and even if it's more difficult in your life, and it's better. All right, finally, from the Thou Shalt Not Steal file, homeowners in North Dakota will have an opportunity to vote to end property taxes. Right? I know. Formerly known as serfdom, property taxes. That means you never own your property. You always have to pay the government for it. We used to call that serfdom. Now we call it freedom because somebody's being bamboozled. The fellow who put the measure on the North Dakota ballot says property taxes are the most egregious and least moral of all taxes, which is true. He says these taxes make homeowners keep paying for property they already own. They're also based on the unrealized paper value of the home. Oh, the immorality of property taxes is manifold. And he says we're going to vote on it in North Dakota, and people are going to see that we can end property taxes and the sky doesn't fall. So there's ad campaigns to guilt the parents in North Dakota saying, if we don't have property taxes, who's going to pay for the schools? How are we going to educate the children? How are we going to get skirts for the librarians without property taxes? And this will be a sign of how big the election stealing, chicanery, and dishonesty is. Is if this fails, then you know that's fake. The dark forces aligned against this must be enormous. But maybe it's quite possible that the powers that be are so focused on baby killing and the sex perverts and all of that, that they could overlook the overturning of property tax in little old North Dakota, and maybe their sky will fall, which would be fine by me. That's it for the Weekly Worldview. Thank you for tuning in. May the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.